They put who on the sheet? Okay, there we go. Somebody just wrote me the other day and said, I wanted you to do such and such because I heard you were humorous. I don't know. All right. Let's just hope the earth doesn't open up and swallow me. Okay, those of you out there that don't know what's going on here and what we're all laughing about, all the better. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam today, first canto, 12th chapter, text number 29. Interesting story about this. I was convinced I was giving class Tuesday morning. I had the correct verse and everything, and I didn't get a chance to study Sunday. I worked all day Monday. I got home at 7 o'clock. I'm like, oh, I got to put something together. So I showered and changed modes and refocused and sat down for 2.5 hours and did my thing and then looked it up and realized, oh, hey, class on Thursday. So, well prepared in advance. All right. Iti rajna upadishyam viprajata kakovidam labdha pachitaya sarve prati jagmu sakangrihan iti rajna upadishyam Viprajata kakovida labdha pachitaya sarve prati jagmu sakam griham iti rajna upadishya viprajata kakovida labdha pachitaya labdha pachitaya sarve pati jagmu sakam griham. Sometimes I always think, how many times is appropriate to chant this? And I've been getting back into listening to Prabhupada's classes when I'm doing my puja in the morning, and he would always have Prajumna chant the verse 3 times. All right, chant. So, chant. Thus, Rajne, unto the king, Upadishya, having advised, Vipra, persons well versed in the Vedas, Jataka Kovida, persons expert in astrology and in the performance of birth ceremonies. Labdha apachitaya. those who have received sumptuously as remuneration. Sarve. All of them. Pratijagmu. Went back. Svakan. Their own. Grihan. Houses. Translation. Thus, those who were expert in astrological knowledge and in the performance of the birth ceremony instructed King Yudhishthira about the future history of his child. Then, being sumptuously remunerated, they all returned to their respective homes. Purport for Srila Prabhupada. The Vedas are the storehouse of knowledge, both material and spiritual. But such knowledge aims at perfection of self-realization. In other words, the Vedas are the guides for the civilized man in every respect. Since human life is the opportunity to get free from all material miseries, it is properly guided by the knowledge of the Vedas in the matters of both material needs and spiritual salvation. The specific intelligent class of men who were devoted particularly to the knowledge of the Vedas were called Vipras, or the graduates of Vedic knowledge. There are different branches of knowledge in the Vedas, of which astrology and pathology are two important branches necessary for the common man. So the intelligent men, generally known as the Brahmanas, took up all the different branches of Vedic knowledge to guide society. Even the Department of Military Education, Dhanurveda, was also taken up by such intelligent men, and the Vipras were also teachers of this section of knowledge, as were Dronacharya, Kripacharya, and others. The word Vipra mentioned herein is significant. There is a little difference between the Vipra and the Brahmanas. The Vipras are those who are expert in karma kanda, or fruitive activities, guiding the society towards fulfilling the material necessities of life, whereas the Brahmanas are expert in the spiritual knowledge of transcendence. This department of knowledge is called Jnana Kanda. And above this, there is Upashana Kanda. The culmination of Upashana Kanda is the devotional service of Lord Vishnu. And when the Brahmanas achieve perfection, they are called Vaishnavas. Vishnu worship is the highest of the modes of worship. Elevated Brahmanas or Vaishnavas engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, and thus Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the science of devotional service, is very dear to the Vaishnavas. And as explained in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is the mature fruit of Vedic knowledge and is superior subject matter above the three khandhas, karma, jnana, and upashana. Among the karma kanda experts, the jataka expert, Vipras, were good astrologers who could tell all the future history of a child born simply by the astrological calculations of the time, lagna. Such expert jataka Vipras were present during the birth of Maharaj Parikit and his grandfather, Maharaj Yudhishthira. And his grandfather, Maharaj Yudhishthira, awarded the Vipras sufficiently with gold, land, villages, grains, and other valuable necessities of life, which also included cows. There is a need of such Vipras in the social structure, and it is the duty of the state to maintain them comfortably, as designed in the Vedic procedure. Such expert Vipras, being sufficiently paid by the state, could give free service to the people in general, and thus this department of Vedic knowledge could be available for all. Om Jnana Tamaranda Sya Janam Jana Shalakaya Chaksunyam Napasmai Sri Guru Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pandinam Jayati Guru Yakri Patanaham Bandhu Sri Guru Nitharuna Avancha Kapati Vidischa Kripa Sundavahi Vacha Patitanam Pavana Vyo Vaishnavi Vyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasani Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune, and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, I obeisances unto you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. So here in this verse, we have what we could say is a fully accepted use or explanation of astrology and pathology, or as we would know it, Ayurveda. Pathology, if someone doesn't know, pathology is the subject that relates to the cause, the effects, and the behavior of various diseases. So these two particular fields are very necessary and very practical for everyone to know about. The Sanskrit word here, jataka kovida, is very interesting. The word jataka, of course, this refers to one's birth story. It indicates the details of what one's birth will foretell, what direction, what activities, all of this, as Prabhupada says in the explanation there, according to the time of the person's birth. This is why this is necessary information. You know, when you approach an astrologer, they want to know where you were born, when you were born, and what time you were born, because these three things give the details of how they can chart this out. Now, the other word, kovida, refers to a person who is expert, who's skilled or wise, somebody who's learned and experienced in a particular field. So not just that they, you know, yeah, I'm familiar with that, but they actually are quite well-versed in it. The Sanskrit dictionary gives the explanation for this word, these particular collection of words, expert, skilled, wise, learned, and experienced. So this denotes somebody that should know what they're speaking about when they speak. Now, interestingly enough, a jataka kovida is very similar to a word used in this connection, muhurta kovida. Muhurta, of course, indicating the breakup of time. And this, of course, naturally indicates an astrologer. And then there's a third similarity, daiva kovida. And this denotes someone who's expert at the destinies and the futures of men. So all of these words connected in here are very indicative of what's taking place in this particular verse, and that they collectively give the information that a vipra has to be engaged as long as they're expert in the trade of their art. And of course, there are many different arts that vipras are expert in. We'll get into that a little bit. And Prabhupada starts off this particular purport with the statement, the Vedas are the storehouse of knowledge, both material and spiritual. But such knowledge aims at perfection of self-realization. In other words, the Vedas are the guides for the civilized man in every respect. So we shouldn't in our mind make a distinction. Well, that's got to do with Vedic knowledge. It has to do with, you know, my going back to home, back to Godhead. I don't really need it for this other part of my life. No, it's very clear here that the Vedas are dealing with the whole package. We like to hear nowadays and use the word holistic. Holistic education, holistic health, you know, like this. The word indicates it includes the whole package. So in this sense here, we see that the Vedas include the entire package of our existence. And our existence is material and spiritual. We have material functions, material necessities we have to be responsible and knowledgeable of. And then, of course, we have our spiritual responsibilities and activities that we have to be knowledgeable of and perform. So this is very clearly indicating that the Vedas are not only just for the basic necessities of life, and that's where the viparas come in, astrologers, Ayurvedic doctors, military sciences, the arts, different things like this. All of these different things are there in one's material activities. How one uses those things, how one spiritually engages those skills, that's our spiritual side. So we have a very clear balance there. The aim of both of these, as Prabhupada says, is self-realization. If we make a distinction, if we divide up in our thought process, well, this is the material side, this is the spiritual side, that's going to divide ourselves. We're not going to be able to be well balanced. If you have a chair, it's got, well, this microphone here. This microphone's very well balanced, everything. All you got to do is a little something different, and the balance comes off and it falls over, like it just did at the very beginning here. So in the same way, everything has to be well balanced. So our spiritual and material sides have to be well balanced. We have to execute both. Now, according to our particular ashram, we may have more or less material responsibilities, more or less spiritual responsibilities, but they have to be taken account for. On a very basic level, we have to take care of this body. Prabhupada always stressed that the health of his disciples was very, very essential, very important. I've told this story many times. I had the good fortune to clean Prabhupada's rooms in 1975 in Chicago. And each morning he would come down from the apartment he was staying in and would offer him a garland and offer obeisances, and he'd go on the morning walk, and we would clean his rooms and then meet back at the temple for Guru Puja and class and so on. And the one morning it had rained the night before. And it wasn't raining at the time, it was just a little misty, but there was water on the ground and like that, and Prabhupada came down, we gave him a garland, we went to offer obeisances, and he stopped us. He said, no, not in the water, in the rain, you'll become sick, and then your service will be hampered. So Prabhupada was much more concerned about our well-being, about our health, than he was about being worshipped. It's the duty of the spiritual master, of the disciple, to offer obeisances to the spiritual master every time they see them. Prabhupada bragged once, he said, if they see me 100 times in a day, they will offer obeisances 100 times in a day. Spiritual part. But here he was stopping. No, no, you'll become sick, don't do it. So there's a spiritual responsibility, but there's a material practicality. Prabhupada was very expert at balancing this. So we have a body, we have to take care of its health, we have to bathe ourselves, we have to dress ourselves. In our society here, a Nagababa, a naked sage walking around in the streets, is not going to fare very well. We have people like this in New York City sometimes. You know, if you've lived there for any length of time, you've seen that. There was, I don't remember his name, but there was one Bubba, they referred to him as a Bubba, I just saw him as a Puggle, and he was very crazy. Man, in Vrindavan, just outside of the road where several devotees have their house, and he was always naked, he had one blanket, and night or day he was laying in the street wrapped in this blanket. Always. And rolling in the dirt, and you know, somebody would give him a chapati or this or that, and to the external he was completely crazy, but the locals knew him to be quite gifted spiritually. At any rate, he passed away and there was a big celebration. So maybe in some place like that, they'll do well. Elsewhere in the world, that's not going to work. So we have that responsibility. We have to bathe ourselves. We have to clothe ourselves. We have to take care of our health. We have to have some residence. We can't just go out and live on 441 on the side of the road there, just, you know, roll in the street. It's not going to work. So we have that balance. But at the same time, we have to maintain our spiritual responsibilities. And that maintenance of the spiritual responsibilities spiritualizes the material activities. We rise early. We take a bath. Why? So that we're clean, so that we can engage in devotional activities. So they go hand in hand like that. They fit very well together. There's a particular mudra done in puja work like this. So the two hands are interlocked, and they're dependent on each other. So in the same way, one can understand that the spiritual and material functions both should lead towards self-realization, because the self-realization is the actual activity of the human being. We think that, you know, these material facility is the main goal, or if we think that only the spiritual activity is the main goal, then it's going to make things difficult within this world. And Abhidhuta, they understand just everything's only on the spiritual. I don't have to worry about the material. And the materialist, the mundaner, they think that everything is just about me making, as Prabhupada would say, pounds and shillings. So we have to learn to balance this. Now, Prabhupada makes another very strong statement here. He says, since human life is the opportunity to get free from all material miseries, it is properly guided by the knowledge of the Vedas in the matters of both spiritual needs and spiritual salvation. So he confirms this. He indicates it, and then he gives a confirmation of it. So they have to be working together because the Vedas cover it all. It's not like they, oh, well, we forgot that part. We didn't cover that. No, the Vedas cover all aspects of it, every point of it. And Prabhupada would often stress, he would make this point, that the human life is not about eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And he would sometimes expand on that, a glorification and the development and the execution of these four activities, you know. He would famously say, you know, the activities of the humans, the activities of the animals are the same. Running on four legs and running on four wheels. He said, but it's still running about. Now, killing with one's teeth and claws or killing in with bombs and weapons like that. Prabhupada continues, sleeping in the gutter or sleeping on a fancy bed in an apartment 25 stories in the sky. Or having sex in the street or having sex in so many elaborate scenes with so much effort and facilities. And all of it's the same. It's all the same. The animals are doing it, the humans are doing it. So this basic eating, sleeping, mating, defending is not what we're here for. This is not human life. Human life means to have knowledge of the Vedas and understand. But the knowledge of the Vedas itself is not meant just for elevating us to human life, just that. It's meant to take us beyond that. Now, in the next few sentences in the purport there, Prabhupada begins to define an understanding of who is a bhikkhu. Not only were they an intelligent class, I mean, anyone can be intelligent, you know, but they were particularly devoted to the Vedas. He specifies this. They were particularly devoted to the Vedas. So intelligence in and of itself was not sufficient. A monkey is very intelligent at getting into all kinds of mischief and achieving. There was one devotee, poor Madhavi Lata's her name. She had a wonderful Prabhupada deity, which she was very devoted to worshiping this Prabhupada deity. And when we were in Vrindavan for Kartik, one day she accidentally left the window of her room open. The monkey very expertly got up the wall. How it knew that particular room, got up the wall into there and just wreaked havoc in that room, strewing everything apart, knocked over Prabhupada even, and tore up all kinds of, you know, and she came back to her room, opened the door. So the monkey's very expert, very intelligent. They know how to get in and do, and that doesn't make them very respected. So a vipra is not only intelligent, but is devoted to the Vedas. They have to have Vedic knowledge. They have to be trained. And trained in their particular field of study. As we mentioned, astrology, pathology, the medical science, I mean the military science, music, cooking, building different types of structures. All of this is covered in different fields of Vedic knowledge. And as a matter of fact, the vipras would be so expert, they could guide all aspects of society. Every field of society had a guru. You have a dance spirit, a teacher, guru. You have a music guru. You have an education guru. You have all these different fields that we've mentioned here. So these are all essential for the functioning of society, and they're all guided through the Vedas by the qualified vipra. Now, Prabhupada takes us a step further in this understanding. He says there's a difference between a vipra and a brahmana. He actually says there's a little difference. Now, when we take a look at that phrase, it could be, there's a little difference there. There is a little difference. Depending on the connotation, it can indicate a little something, you know. There's a little difference. There is a little difference. But it indicates that they're not exactly the same. So whether it's meant as a small difference or whether it's meant to indicate that we have to analyze this, that's a different subject. But we can understand clearly, Prabhupada says, that there's a difference. And he points out, The viparas are those who are expert in karma kanda, or fruitive activities, guiding society towards the fulfilling of material necessities, one's occupational duty. Whereas the brahmanas are expert in spiritual knowledge of transcendence. So both educated, both trained, both expert in the Vedas, one for the practical material side, one to elevate us to the spiritual side. This department of knowledge, Prabhupada says, is called Jnanakanda. So again, he notes, just as he did in that first sentence, the difference between spiritual and material knowledge and education, learning, and consequently, the difference in the teaching process. That person who teaches you in the Vedas about your particular, you know, field of occupation is not going to be the same type of knowledge you're going to get from that Brahmin that elevates you to the standard of transcendental knowledge. And so both of these sides have their own particular field of knowledge. Jnanakanda, as Prabhupada mentions, is for the development of spiritual knowledge. Both are needed, both are required, and both are given by proper learned teachers. But Prabhupada then takes it a step further. And he says, above these is Upashanakanda. The culmination of this is the service to Lord Vishnu. And when the Brahmins achieve perfection, they're called Vaishnavas. So, Vaishnava means that we've achieved perfection in the field of spiritual understanding. As Prabhupada would say often, it's not a cheap thing to be a Vaishnava. So, this word here he uses, Upashana, comes from two words also, Upa and Asana. So, Upa meaning higher, and Asana meaning seat. So, it's a higher seat or a higher placement. Socially and academically, knowledgely, and Prabhupada states that. So the Vaishnava is on this level, a higher level than just a vipra or just a brahmana. These vipras and brahmanas are knowledgeable, one in the material field, one in the spiritual field, but the Vaishnava understands and gives devotion to Lord Vishnu. This is his exclusive field. He doesn't need to pursue these other things. This is not his point of education. So, why is that? It's because they understand that Vishnu is the highest mode of worship. That the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu brings about ultimately everything else. Here again, Prabhupada's famous example of the tree, watering the roots of the tree. I just planted two hydrangeas yesterday in the yard. My wife likes hydrangeas quite a bit. I got her a couple and put them in. Now, if I just pour the hose on top of the plant, you know, okay, looks nice, it gets freshy, but the plant itself isn't going to survive very well. I have to take that water and put it at the root. Turn it on, set it there, let it saturate up for a while. So then in that way, the roots become nourished, and then they can in part nourish the rest of the plant. So in the same way, the activity of worshiping Lord Vishnu ultimately satisfies the spirit soul. This brings full culmination of one's engagement in transcendental activity. It's a very clear, very distinct, and very important understanding to be able to know these differences. Three kinds of teachers, three levels of educators, but three different understandings of what the goal of those individuals is as well. For brahminical rituals, for ceremonies, for actions like that, these, when done properly, lead to the enjoyment and power based in the Vedas. They're found in dharmic execution, but when they get added with the spiritual factor, it becomes actually something that's spiritually beneficial for the welfare of humanity. But here Prabhupada says something which is really, really nice. He says, but for the Vaishnavas, the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the science of devotional service, is very, very dear to the Vaishnavas. As is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is the mature fruit of Vedic knowledge and is superior subject matter above all others. I refer back to this verse I always open Bhagavatam class with, which is Sanatana Goswami, my only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune, and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances unto you, Srimad Bhagavatam. There's not one aspect that has not been covered in that description. Companion, friend, guru, wealth, deliverance, fortune, good luck, source of tasting pleasure. I mean, everything's covered there. This is all found in the Srimad Bhagavatam, according to Sanatana Goswami. Now, if we don't find those things in the Srimad Bhagavatam, then we can understand there's something lacking in ourselves. This is why Prabhupada, Nitya Bhagavata Seva, this is why Prabhupada gave us to study the Bhagavatam every day. This was a very important principle. You knew wherever Srila Prabhupada was, there was going to be a morning class. You give that morning class, sometimes 5-10 devotees, sometimes 100, 200 devotees, whatever. And the format was basically the same. Jai Radha Madhava, chant the verse, explanation, give the, word for word explanation, give the translation, and then he would speak. Sometimes he would have whoever read from the purport he had written. Sometimes he would just go into it himself. Always some guidance, some enlightenment like that. So these are the different types of educators, the different types of learning processes that we can find in the Vedas. And we read here that these, in this verse, that this particular one, particularly the Jataka Kovida, was engaged by Maharaj Yudhisthira. Of course, we know Maharaj Yudhisthira, it says in the verse, how does it say it exactly? For the future history of his child. It doesn't mean Maharaj Yudhisthira's own child. Of course, we know that Pariksit Maharaj was the child of Abhimanyu, who was horribly defeated in the Battle of Kurukshetra, very unjustly. That's a whole other story. So Maharaj Yudhisthira arranged for the Jataka Kovida to come and give a full reading of the child's chart, full indication. Now, in this community, we have many qualified astrologers who are quite skilled at these practices. But I think it's fair to say that this next line here is where we might find some differences. And it mentions that Maharaj Yudhisthira awarded the Vipras sufficiently with gold, land, villages, grains, and other valuable necessities of life, which also included cows. Now, the various Vipras or Purohits, priests who perform services here in this community, I know them all, and I don't think any of us have ever been given gold, land, villages, grains, and cows. although I do remember at one fire ceremony, one fire juggle we did when I was in St. Louis, at the end I would mention, so this is the final offering, if anyone has any gold they want to offer into, you know, just kind of like an Indian lady got up and took her gold bangles off and threw them into the fire. Nice. So, but at any rate, now there are different services that these variety of priests are engaged in that are necessary. There's the Garbhadan, the conception of a child, Pumsavana, the act for seeking to have a male child, Simantanayona, which is the ceremony for the safety of the child and its safe deliverance, Jatikarma, the ceremony at the birth of the child, Namkarna, the ceremony at the giving of the name to the child, Nishkarma, the ceremony for taking the child out for the first time, hopefully to the temple. Sometimes I see people come into Lotus with this tiny, tiny little bitty, bitty, bitty baby. I'm like, first time out? Yeah, we thought he'd be bringing to Lowe's. Okay. I could make another suggestion, but you're probably not interested. Anaprashana, the ceremony for giving the first grains to the child. The Chudha Karma, the ceremony for cutting the hair for the first time. Karnaveda, ceremony for piercing the ears. Yes, there is such a ceremony. Upanaya, giving of the sacred thread. Vedarumba, beginning the study of the Vedas. Vivaha, the marriage ceremony, Griha Pravesha, entering into a new home. So all of these different ceremonies, which are essential and which are performed in everyone's life, require vipras, purohits, and priests to do them. And there's a whole list of others as well. Now, for all of these functions, these personalities, these Vaishnava priests, if you will, they have to study, they have to be educated, they have to plan these things according to circumstances and astrological considerations and days of the week and times of the day. And it means they have to be knowledgeable on these fields. They have to arrange for everything to be set up. They have to properly install the different personalities that are expected to be present. All of this takes different types of skill and understanding as to how, where, and when. And this is why such priests are given dakshin, to compensate them for this effort. It's actually said that at the conclusion of the ceremony is when the priest should be given the dakshin. And at that time, the priest has certain mantras that he recites that give blessings to the yajamana, who's the sponsor, the person performing, I mean, this is performed on behalf of. And that if the dakshin is not given, then the benedictions, the results of that ceremony, do not go to the yajamana. They don't receive that. So it's an essential part of the function. It's not just that, oh, you know, you got to pay me now. No, there's an entire concept in the Vedas as to how this is done. The transference of this activity, of the punya, of the religious result, of the spiritual benefit of these things. One may not be able to give gold, land, villages, grains, cows, but some suitable donation must be made when one engages a priest to do these, to perform these different activities. This is part of the process. It's something that we should be familiar with and that we should understand as a part of our culture as well. So, in this particular sense, noted in this verse, the maintenance of these brahmanas was generally performed, taken care of, by the state, by the government. And then as a result, the services that they were offering could be done freely with no concern. Of course, we live in a different times now, and it'd be nice if all qualified Brahmins were suitably supported by the state, but we don't see that that goes on in our modern society. So therefore, it is the responsibility of those of us that engage priests to reciprocate with them, to remunerate them properly. Now, we've mentioned various types of fields of learning, and one of those is music. To be more specific, singing. And such an expert singer was Srila Govinda Ghosh Thakur. We'll mention some of the functions of his life. Mahaprabhu, when he requested that Nityananda should return to Bengal and continue the preaching there, not stay with him in Puri, he mentioned that three devotees should return with him: Ramdas, Madhava, and Vasudev. Now, Madhava and Vasudev were two of the three brothers, Madhava, Vasudev, and Govinda. And Govinda, he stayed back with Mahaprabhu. The other two brothers and Ramdas, they returned with Nityananda to Bengal for the purpose of continuing the preaching. According to the Gaura Prasad Charitavali, these three brothers were sweet-throated kirtan singers, it described. Sweet-throated. That's such a nice description of a singer. Oh, very sweet-throated singer. And when the three of them would sing together, and just imagine the harmonies. You know, we have in our modern times the three tenors. And there was a famous recording done years ago, and to listen to them all harmonizing together was just so nice. Who can imagine the sound of Vasudev, Madhava, and Govinda singing together the holy names, different bhajans glorifying the Lord? One of my favorite things is to hear Bhadra Prabhu sing Udita Aruna, as he did this morning. He's been singing that for years and years and years. And when he breaks into it, it's just like the heart feels such warmth. Of course, this was one of the first bhajans that I learned way back when I was a brahmachari, so I have a little special spot in my heart for it anyway. But to hear him sing it so nicely. And so when these three would sing in this very sweet way, Nityananda would often dance. And his dancing during their singing was said to be filled with great ecstasy. They previously lived together, which was a pretty common thing, in Shihata, in that district there. And Vasudev's father, well, they're all of the fathers, he resided in Kumarahat. And after the father passed away, and Vasudev, Govinda, and Madhava, they all three moved to live together in Navadvip. And as a result of living there in Navadvip, they were active in the Lord's pastimes during this time. They were from a Kayastic caste, and particularly their origins were in Radhadesh. Radhadesh is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita as that part of of Bengal where the Ganges does not flow. And of course, they were all three eternal associates of Nityananda and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he mentions that they were all three situated in Madhurya Ras, and they were in this mood of serving. And as was mentioned earlier, Gaura Gonadesha Deepika mentions them to be three of the gopis in Vrindavan Lila, Kalavati, Rasalasa, and Gunatunga Shakti. Gunatunga. So when Mahaprabhu was in Jagannath Puri, residing there, and the Rath Yatra festival, and Shivananda Sen was bringing all the devotees, they would come every year with the devotees in Bengal, and they would perform what became famous kirtans, of which they were particularly appreciated for. And of the three, Madhava, Vasudev, and Govinda, Govinda was particularly known for being really sweet-voiced, sweet-throated, as it said. His kirtans during the annual Rath Yatra parade were highly appreciated. Highly appreciated. Now, when the Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu departed from this world, then the three brothers, they went their separate ways. They no longer lived together as a combined family, so to speak. Govinda Ghosh went to Advaita, Madhava Ghosh went to Danihat, and Vasudev Ghosh went to Tamala. And so in this way, they didn't keep their joint family living like that after the disappearance of Mahaprabhu. Actually, Govinda Ghosh was one of those, when Srinivasacharya was returning from some tours to Navadvip, Govinda Ghosh is one of those that particularly gave his mercy and his blessings to him. It was read earlier from the Chaitanya Charitamrita about the activities of these three brothers, how they were the 82nd, 83rd, and 84th branches of the tree of devotional service of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, this pastime that's mentioned about Govinda Ghosh, when he stayed back and he traveled shortly with Mahaprabhu, arranged, had a lunch program. And then at the end of lunch, it's very common to take this haritaki, as it's called, or a little breath freshener. It's a collection of herbs and spices. Divyanga and others know quite well. I offer this to Giriraj every morning, and I've shared it with many. It's a mouth freshener after the meal to, you know, rejuvenate. So there was none there. So Govinda Ghosh went throughout the village and collected from this place, that place, and so he gave to Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu was very, very satisfied with it. Now, Govinda Ghosh, being a servant, thought, I should hold on to some of this, because tomorrow Mahaprabhu is going to want this again. So, you know, better than going and look, I'll just keep him on hand. So the next day, Mahaprabhu had his meal. He said, Govinda, you have some haritaki? Oh, yes, I have right here. Mahaprabhu took it. He was very satisfied. After the meal was finished, he called Govinda. He said, yesterday I asked and you took some time. You had to go in here and there and like that. Today you had. He said, yes, after yesterday I saved some for you. Mahaprabhu said, oh, He said, this story mentality, this is not good for a renunciate. This is the mentality of a householder. He said, therefore, you should stay here and establish a temple and take care of matters in that regards. Now, this was the direct instruction from Mahaprabhu to him. It was very painful instruction that was given to him, but something that he immediately embraced and took up. So this is some indication that although in the renounced order one depends daily, madhukar, just going out and begging whatever comes, in the maintenance of the temple or in the families, there has to be some setting aside, some storing, some arranging for the future. You know, this is part of the responsibilities like that. Renunciates, they don't have to worry about these things. Whatever comes day or night, that's all Krishna's arrangement. But those who have other obligations, they have to be a little more conscious. So this is one nice lesson there from Govinda Ghosh's life. Now, also in the pastime, Mahaprabhu later in life asked Govinda Ghosh to marry. Govinda Ghosh, a very, very nice wife, and they were blessed with a beautiful son. Unfortunately, the wife and the son both passed away, just shortly, one right after the other. Whether the son went first and the wife died from separation, whether the mother died at childbirth or something, that's not so clearly indicated. What is indicated that Govinda Ghosh was deep in grief. Just completely, you know, disturbed by the loss of his family. They were devotees and serving. And in this mood of loss, in this mood of separation, he stopped serving his deity. Deity worship is known as nitya seva, but it's eternal. When one accepts the worship of the worship of that deity continues. Come hell or high water, as we say, the seva gets done each day. You know, some arrangement has to be made. But in this particular case, Govinda Ghosh was not serving the deity. And apparently, according to his pastime, it was not just, oh, I didn't do it today, but for some period of time, he wasn't serving. And so one evening, the deity, Govinda, came to Govinda in a dream. He said, Govinda, he said, well, what's going on? You've lost one son. You should lose both sons? And Govinda inquired, well, what do you mean? He said, well, I'm your son also. You're not taking care of me. I'm going to die if you don't feed me. And of course, we can appreciate the intimacy of the relationship with the deity, that the deity is speaking directly to the pujari, and not only speaking directly, but saying, you don't feed me, I'm going to die. Well, the deity's not going to die, but this was the intimacy of this relationship. So Govinda replied, he said, well, you know, I had hopes of having one son who would survive so that at my passing, the different functions of Anyeshta Samskar would be performed for me. But I have no son now, so what am I going to gain by serving you? You're the deity. You're not going to do anything for me. Such a conversation. So Gopinath said, no. He said, I promise you that after your departure, I will celebrate your Shuddha ceremony, the anniversary of your passing, in a very appropriate way. Govinda said, yes, you'll do. He said, yes, I will take care of it. Now, can I have something to eat? I'm hungry. So in this way, Govinda Ghosh returned to serving Gopinath very appropriately. And then, of course, in due course of time, Govinda Ghosh departed from this world. And part of the ceremony that the son performs is he wears kusagrass ring during this observation. So they give kusagrass ring to the Gopinath deity during the Shuddha ceremony. And he, to this day, as it was mentioned, to this day, he wears this ring. So in this way, we see that if one nicely serves the deity, if one is completely surrendered to the deity will do anything, will fulfill any need that is there. This is a very personal and intimate relationship. But this is there for us to read and learn and appreciate. Govinda Ghosh also wrote many songs, one very nice song here. He wrote, O people of Navadvip, at whom are you staring? Spread your arms and stop Gora. Make him come back. Who is there now who will clasp his hands? something online. Externally, it appears that Sheila Govindagopal's devotional service was not unmotivated, because he asked Gopinath, what will I get from serving him? As a Bengali, I understand Abhiman, but can you please explain this to us? From Swahana.
The mood that goes in the ghost is something far above our understanding of the mood. We don't go to Radha Shyam Singh and say, okay, I'm going to bring you some food, but what are you going to do for me? But in an intimate sense, one who's very connected to the deity and sees the deity as their own child, they may have some conversations. When the story of the Shakshi Gopal deity, the Brahmin said, who's gonna witness that the young boy is supposed to, the old Brahmin did his words to me, what the. So these types of relationships that we see, we shouldn't misunderstand them, that this is some material connection, this is some mundane karmakanda activity. We should understand that this is the highest level of devotional service, that this is the highest level of dependency upon the deity for all the necessities of one's life. It is a necessity that when the parents pass away, the son performs some different ceremonies for the departure. If there's no son, who's going to do those? No oldest child, who's going to do those? So in this way, the reciprocation was being sought from the deity by Govinda Ghosh. So not a material thing, but, oh, what am I going to get from you? But no, I this has to be performed. You're my Lord and Master. How is this going to be done? So this was an opportunity to let the deity step forward and show how he always protects his devotees. And in all circumstances, his devotees are protected and cared for. That's my question. Yes, Sesha Pitman.
Because he saved Mahasakya. He told him to open the temple there, stay there, open the temple, open the gate there. So he wasn't chastising him because he had that mentality, but rather engaging it.
That story is understood from two different angles. One is that, no, you've saved something, it's chastising. Just like when Sanatana Goswami found out that Ishan had saved some gold coins. Ishan's intention was to take care of Sanatana Goswami. No, we're traveling, we're going to need something, so I'll put away something. But Sanatana Goswami, being a total renunciate, understood, no, now you've jeopardized it. So, on one sense, as an renunciate, Mahaprabhu, no, you don't save things. But on the other side, for the service of the Lord, it's just like when Yadu Govinda was massaging Mahaprabhu. So Mahaprabhu was laying in the doorway. He's exhausted from the kirtan and that kunkha, sumptuous prasadam. And Govinda said, Mahaprabhu,